Welcome to The Love Synapse, Understanding the Neurobiology of Physical Attraction. I'm Alina Frank, EFT coach and sexpert trainer, and I'm here with my husband, training partner, and co-creator of Path to Passion, Dr. Craig Wiener.
Hi, everybody. So glad to have you here.
So, there is an interesting... What we want to share with those of you getting this bonus audio is how mixed up things can get if you do not wait a while to have intercourse with a potential partner. Right?
Yeah. You know, what an issue to talk about. It's a hot one.
And it's
really, really, really important because we want to somehow give some understanding and insight and not just be like your parent, right? That says,
yeah,
just wait because of some moral value judgment perspective.
Right.
And that there really is significant importance and value in being able to look at this from a wider view.
Absolutely. And so you've come up with some of the science behind it, and I'm going to be sharing from my perspective of working with single women on this very issue.
Yes. Where do you want to start?
And men.
Thank you.
Yes, we have somehow this idea that it's okay for men, but to just jump around in some circles, we have this idea that it's acceptable for men and not for women. But the science stands firmly in the arena of waiting, and so let's talk about some of those. Why are we even calling this the love synapse? Can you just explain what that is?
Well, that's kind of simplified, isn't it? Like there's this one synapse in the brain that's all about love, and we could draw it and find it. And
can you tell me what a synapse is again?
Sure. Why don't we start there? Synapse, very simply, is space. It's a space where connection happens, where one nerve cell has an axon and it meets another nerve cell and it meets a dendrite, and those nerve endings come together and there's a space in between. We call it the synaptic cleft, and it's really in this space of this meeting where an electrical charge comes down one neuron and it causes a dispensation, it causes chemicals to be released and neurotransmitters to come through, and then they travel across their little creek across to the other side, and there are receptors on the other side. And if there are receptors for those chemicals that are being released, then they pick them up, they connect, and they turn on a mechanism that causes something to happen in the new nerve that then transmits information and causes things to happen.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's
a brilliant metaphor for what we're talking about.
It really is. It's perfect,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for coming up with that. So before I get, I want to talk about some of the reasons why I coach my clients into waiting. But let's hear what some of the research has to say about this, and in terms of that, you know, the hot, you know, that initial zing, that kaboom, that physical attraction that just knocks you over.
Well, there's a lot, you know. With the advancement of a lot of the new technologies and functional MRIs and that are happening and other tests as well, we're able to start to peer into the brain in more effective ways than we ever have before.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So we're able to see when somebody's feeling a particular emotion, mm-hmm, parts of the brain that are lighting up and activated.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really starting to lend some important insight into what's happening when we feel different things. So I think it's always important for us to look at, too, is that we're animals, right? We somehow hold ourselves,
yes,
separate, and we are animals. And so there are basic drives evolutionarily, I will say,
mm-hmm,
in us propagating the species and us continuing our ongoing progeny and creating more of us so that the species continues,
mm-hmm,
right? So,
And that all happens when we're talking about our the animal part of our brain. We're talking about the oldest parts of the brain. So these are almost like reflexes. This is totally subconscious. This goes beyond your conscious ability to really control this.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're going to get to a point in this discussion later that says there are drives for genetic diversity. There is drives for continuation of the species. And the interlinking of areas of the brain, there's often overlap mm-hmm. between that romantic love that draws us into connection, that draws us toward sexual intimacy and copulation and creating, you know, more of us, that they're very linked. So love and sex and lust, they're not totally different areas of the brain. They're very intertwined.
Yeah, and that's where it can get kind of sticky. Ba-dum-bum.
Okay.
All right. So let's talk about our animal side, our wild animal side. And attraction.
Well, you know what? A lot of the studies that are happening out there, when they look to that initial attraction, the initial love and lust connection, a lot of the studies so far have been looking at the visual aspect. So they start to do studies that follow that visual attraction of one person for another, whether mm-hmm. it be same gender or other. And that starts to turn on parts of the brain that then create this whole cascade of effects that start to bring in all the big players. And we're going to talk more about them. But we're talking about dopamine, and then we're talking about oxytocin, and then we're talking about vasopressin, and we're talking about all these different neuromodulators and hormones that get activated with that attraction of wanting to connect, wanting to unify, wanting to come closer and be more intertwined.
Mm-hmm.
So both in love and, you know, both in romantic love and sex.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, one of the things that is looked at is, you know, in the attraction, and I want to move it both attraction with the idea of attraction moving toward romantic love.
Mm-hmm.
Because it really is a separate discussion if we're only looking just for the lustful expression and sexuality only.
Right.
And that's really a different discussion than we're looking for. Because if one wants to very cleanly partake in sexual activity and just have release and that and keep it aside from romantic love at all, that's really a different discourse.
Right, but doesn't this get all very complicated?
It does, because yeah. then feelings of loving feelings can come in.
Yes,
but I'm still.
I mean, even something that I just learned recently is the fascinating look at one of the hormones that you just discussed, which is oxytocin. Where if there's oxytocin that's released, which is the nickname for the oxytocin hormone, is the love or the cuddle?
Mm-hmm.
The cuddle hormone, right?
Mm-hmm.
That loving feeling that you get, that loving feeling. That after orgasm, if this is achieved, it ends up staying in a woman's system for 28 days.
Wow.
Aha! The moon cycle! And interestingly enough, it'll take 3 days to completely be released from a man's system, 3 days being the amount of time a sperm can stay alive and implant inside an egg to fertilize it. So having sex, and just this little piece, just having sex and having that oxytocin release and having that flood our system can intoxicate us into that feeling of being in love without necessarily being a good thing or actually being real love. I mean, the kind of love that we want, long-lasting, you know, earthmate, soulmate, like we say.
Yeah, the idea that somehow we are separate or distinct from our hormones and neurotransmitters is just a pure illusion, right?
Yeah.
Ask Candace Pert when she came out with Molecules of Emotion, and that was just groundbreaking for so many people because
sure.
we have this distinction, like, I'm this thinking, rational being, and then there are these hormones. I'm sorry,
uh-huh.
but these are drugs. These uh-huh. are, you know, these are endogenous pharmaceutical chemicals that
right.
are causing us to think and feel in different ways, and we
yeah.
can't separate from that.
Right.
So, yeah, so
right.
even if you're maybe just out just for the physical pleasure of it, and all of a sudden you're feeling loving feelings
yes.
because of these chemicals that
yes.
have been released in your body, you're right, you can't totally separate it. But
right.
I'm still going to follow the course
okay.
that we're looking and exploring with the intention of
sure.
romantic love relationship.
Sure.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, in that idea, you know, if we look at both love and lust within love, then we look at, you know, what are the effects? Why do we do it? Well, number one, there's increased sense of promoting well-being qualities. So when we're in love, we're creating chemicals that make us feel good,
mm-hmm.
right? Pure and simple. Mm-hmm. We feel better when we're in love in general,
right?
It does have health-giving qualities, and sex in love has health-giving, affording qualities. We promote the furthering of the species. So there are a lot of benefits to being in love and being sexual, right? So let's just start off really simple.
Oh, yeah. We list, in Path to Passion, we list a whole slew of health benefits.
Mm-hmm. True. And so what happens is as we start to connect with another person in that yummy kind of way, right, what starts to happen is we start to create a type of attachment.
Right.
We're not going to get into all the attachment types, but we're starting to create, for lack of a better word, a connection.
Right.
Right. And so that bonding starts to happen, and that level of attachment in a romantic relationship, then that starts to activate what we call the brain reward system, the brain reward areas of the body, right, and in the brain. And so that causes oxytocin and vasopressin receptors to be activated. So now we're getting this reward, in other words, like chocolate or like anything else, that makes us feel better. And the more we get of it, the more we want of it. And the more we want it, the more we get it, the more we get it, right? So that reward system gets very much activated.
Yeah, and I think we can all identify with that feeling of new love just kind of making us foggy, making us our thoughts are continually focused on that other person, and when am I going to see them again, and that kind of that obsessive thinking, it is like a drug.
Well, it is, and we're going to get to this further, and you're really just like jump to the climax of a lot of what I was going to talk about. But one of the things that happens with this enhancement of this romantic love connection is that while it turns on all the reward pathways, all the feeling good pathways, it also deactivates parts of the frontal cortex, which is our critical thinking.
Right.
Right? And it starts to lower our ability to separate and to see clearly and to assess the other person, and it enhances trust and lowers our ability for a skillful judgment. So we'll talk more about that, but that's just kind of a precursor to why there's challenges in this initial falling in love euphoria, because we believe what we're feeling, and that may not be bringing all the pieces of good judgment and critical thinking in.
And in some of the work that I do, we've actually run polls and have found that most women within the first 2 months of being with someone know whether this is the right person to be with and to be in relationship with. And so what ends up happening if you end up sleeping with someone before that period of time is that then, again, the critical thinking, the assessment, the analyzing, the stepping back, the looking at all the aspects of this potential partner who is really feeling the most important role in your life, it's cloudy. It gets cloudy and murky. You can't make a clear judgment.
It does. So just take, for example, they've done a lot of studies where they will have a person that's in love look into the face of another, and there are a lot of visual clues, right? So in other words, the whole idea of neuroception, is it safe? What's the feedback, the facial recognition visually of what their face and upper body is doing, how their eyes are? All of those things are huge neurological mirrors that stimulate so much brain activity, we're talking in the cortex, we're talking the medial insula, the cingulate, the hippocampus, all these different areas and subcortical regions as well get activated and turned on by looking at the face of somebody who's in love with.
Okay.
Right? So your whole body just lights up.
Yes.
So what starts to happen is as that connection develops and as passionate love gets further created, there becomes what we're talking about, exhilaration and euphoria and the sense of happiness and sense of well-being and all these things, the reward pathways turned on, and that starts to create feelings that really turn on the same activity, same parts of the brain that are turned on, for example, when you take cocaine.
Ah.
So introduce cocaine and you have that reported euphoria and that up feeling,
right?
Same parts of the brain. So that makes total sense. Now, when you get put in that feel-good state from that, what starts to happen is then on a social behavior, further connection, further desire to be with them, mm-hmm. further depth of connection,
right.
further pieces that have to do with behaviors as far as relationship formation and
right.
moving together and living together and doing things together and all the behaviors that then start to follow that,
sure.
those feelings. And then, of course, sex is one of those things that jumps right in on that, right? So there are overlapping areas in the hypothalamus and areas of the brain that those romantic, loving, feel-good feelings now all of a sudden start overlapping with a desire to want to express that those feelings sexually.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Right.
And this is that tricky part.
Right.
Right? Because you feel those heartfelt feelings, those feel-good emotions, your critical thinking is going down, now you're starting to make decisions that first night, that second night, that fifth night, that first date, that third
right,
date, whatever that,
right,
that is.
And then feeling some pressure to go that extra step as well.
Sure, because of expectations of
and
others.
Culturally.
Right.
Yep.
Yep.
A whole slew of reasons why people may jump in before they're really feeling ready.
Yeah, because on one hand, you also, maybe you haven't had those feelings in a while.
Right.
And you were going to do whatever it takes, consciously and unconsciously, to continue
right.
that reward pathway being activated,
yeah.
right?
And there's something that I want to bring up, and I think this might be the right time to do it, that the whole idea of recapitulation, I want you to just define recapitulation as we teach it in our trainings. The idea of it's been called different things. So recapitulation, reenactment, compulsion.
Compulsion to repeat. Right. In other words, it basically speaks to, for example, Freud talked about the compulsion to repeat the trauma. And there seems to be this desire within the brain, the unconscious, the mind, the body, etc., to recreate scenarios which need further healing.
Right.
Right? So in other words, if I was abandoned by my mother when I was very young, and that's a wound that hasn't really been healed, then somehow there's a drive within me to recreate scenarios of abandonment that give me the opportunity to heal. But unless we're doing things like EFT, unless we're doing healing mechanisms
right.
that allow that healing to happen, I'm probably even less capable
right.
of healing that abandonment wound later on, because now I have more experiences of it failing.
Right. But in the arena of sex, mm-hmm. I see this show up so often when sexual abuse is still present. And we can say that it's present in the field, if you want to talk about it in those terms, or we can talk about it as that part of the brain that is recapitulating, is bringing these scenarios forward. We could talk about it in terms of law of attraction, that you're attracting what you're vibrating. So the idea that, let's say, someone that has felt physical connection or love or feeling good at an early age in their body through sexual abuse can be more susceptible to this idea of jumping in way too soon. And we see that played out with people choosing partners, the way that they, the decisions that they make in relationships, and certainly underscore big letters, bold, in the arena of sex and sexuality.
The original wiring that happens when we're very young
exactly.
is a very hard one to break. Definitely
right.
possible.
And, yeah.
And we know that it's possible.
Definitely with tools like EFT and matrix reimprinting.
Right. So, one of the things, that we also look at, we're talking about when the reward pathways are happening, we have a lot of dopamine surging, and dopamine is, of course, associated with desire, with euphoric states, with the feeling of reward, with the feeling of addiction. So all of these things are happening with dopamine. But one of the things that happens in the brain is that when you have a lot of dopamine, it has an inverse relationship with serotonin. So serotonin is linked to mood and appetite. But what that means is, for example, when people are in high states of being in love, dopamine surging, serotonin uh-huh. is dropping. One of the conditions that is very pathognomonic with very low serotonin is something called obsessive compulsive disorder.
Right.
Right? And when people are in high levels of being in love,
right.
their serotonin levels drop so low they actually look like they're OCD. And if you start to look at that, that makes total sense, because what it becomes is this loving state can become a compulsion
yeah.
to the exclusion of everybody else's opinion, of everything else. There is this fixation.
Of eating, of sleeping, of anything.
Yes.
Yes.
It's true. Again, another way in which we lose some of our rationality, and people are going, what are you doing with that guy?
Yeah.
Do you not see this? And you're like, you know what? You don't understand.
Right.
Right? So these are brain changes that in these neuromodulators, these neurotransmitters and hormones are having us think differently than we normally think. But because there's the euphoria associated with it, we are drugged.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. Definitely.
And going back to the wiring that you were just talking about, especially with, you know, early childhood sexual abuse, or not even, I want to even lessen that, because many people might say, well, I wasn't sexually abused, but, and then they create a scenario in which they received extra attention from a father or an uncle or somebody else that gets wired in a little confusing way.
Sure.
Because there was a sexual energy, there were sexual feelings.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, that term is so broad for me at this point. I mean, even having you as a child sitting on your uncle's lap and getting just the heebie-jeebies that something was weird. Not, and you didn't even feel anything, and he didn't do anything inappropriate that anyone else would have seen, is enough.
Right. You know, that we're talking about wiring, you know, how our brains wire, especially when we're young. Well, they also wire when we're adults. So in early romantic love, one of the things that I actually had just found out in a paper I was reading was, you know, I certainly knew about oxytocin, a lot of the other ones we're talking about, but when you are in the early stages of romantic love, especially the higher the intensity of it, the more nerve growth factor is released. And this I didn't know. So picture this for a second, at least in my hypothesis, is when we are in those early stages of romantic love and we're creating nerve growth factor, that is facilitating more and more connections or wiring in the brain.
Right.
So the wiring of the brain of this is the person I'm going to spend my life with, this is the person I love, this is the person I, right? And we're starting to create these new neural networks that are tied in with these good feelings, with not as much of the critical thinking.
Right.
We start perhaps moving down a direction that maybe isn't the greater perspective for a lifetime.
Right.
Right? And that's an important one. At the same time, just to kind of go back, the hypothalamus is also creating more oxytocin, more vasopressin, and these things are all now connected to more attachment and more bonding. So we now have this dump of so many of these chemicals that are creating. It's like the universe is just trying to get us to procreate,
right?
And it is just starting to create, in fact, interesting mixes of pairings.
Right.
Right? So,
and that's not to say that those pairings aren't appropriate or that this isn't the right person for you.
Right.
But what we're talking about, taking a step back and doing some critical thinking without the added mix of the physical sexual cocktail.
So then the question becomes, if we have these cocktails going on and they're causing our frontal cortex and our critical thinking mind to be deactivated.
Right.
And they're causing, for example, our amygdala to be deactivated. So now we have no fear.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Now we have greater trust, bonding, connection, all of these things. But we're not thinking so clearly.
Right.
And we're going forward with that. What do you do? Right. Yeah. So how does one, everything is about moving you toward connecting.
Mm-hmm.
Every chemical, every wiring. So is this, it's not fair. You know, it's really not fair to be able to have a scenario in which one thinks critically. So, you know, what do you advise people then?
Ah, ancient Chinese secret. EFT. Yes, it is all about tapping to get you into more of your present state of mind, your critical thinking, that part of you that knows and is wise and can assess all the different information out there and judge correctly without the influence of the emotional body.
Okay.
Yes.
So that's once you're in the scenario that you're using tapping to just help give yourself greater perspective and not just using old wiring.
Right. I also see it as a way of tapping down fears of saying no.
Okay.
And waiting until you know that this is... So what I advise my clients is to wait until they have 100% certainty that this is the right person, through critical analysis, through behavioral assessment and other tools, really looking at this person as a whole, and then going the extra step. And what's the extra step for me is something as simple as the KISS test.
What's that?
The KISS test is kissing the person to see whether there is some spark, whether there is a zing, whether there is, and I'm not necessarily saying wait all this time to start kissing, but you can, and those women that have done that and have waited to actually have that kiss until there's some assurance that this might be the right person, that's when they can really, you know, they can discern, yes, I am physically attracted. Because if you're not engaged in that, in the physicalness of the physical end of a relationship yet in the beginning, then you could have this question of, okay, everything else is there, but is there physical attraction? And of course, that absolutely has to be part of it. Oh, stop. I have a Gumby and a Pokey little toys on my desk here.
They're dancing.
And Craig is making them dance. It's very funny. So,
you know, the piece, there was a great quote. So there was a wonderful paper called The Neurobiology of Love by Professor Psyche. And the quote of this was, that I liked, is the all-engaging passion of romantic love is mirrored by a suspension of judgment. Or relaxation, at least, of judgment criteria by which we assess other people, which is a function of the frontal cortex. So what they're saying is you need early in the relationship, if you wish to employ criteria that make sense to you, what's going to make you happy in a relationship? What are the needs that you have in a relationship?
Right.
You know, when you have your ability to have your full frontal cortex engaged, that's the time to really be conscious of employing and exploring and engaging through communication in lots of ways this potential partner, because once the chemical dump happens, it's very challenging to be able to do that in a complete way.
Right. Yeah. And what that number that I threw out earlier, 2 months for women, the vast majority of the women that we surveyed, 2 months for them to figure out that this was the wrong person for them. In actuality, guess how long the average person took to actually end that relationship that was wrong?
How long?
Scary.
How long? I'm scared to ask.
Yeah, 2 years.
Oh, my God.
I know. So just to go through like a short list of the reasons, the benefits of waiting, because here are all the scary reasons, you know, the things that we should be avoiding and the things that will hope, you know, maybe have you thinking twice about jumping into bed. But the benefits of waiting include greater intimacy. Studies are now showing that couples that wait and become friends and have a greater level of intimacy, and that their relationship is actually stronger if they wait to engage physically in sex. And then the greater communication happens when you are close to someone, and that greater communication only leads to better sex.
Right.
I mean, it's rare that, you know, there's a one-night stand where you're feeling really good about the sex that happened. You know, most of it is, you know, walking that hall of shame the next day. And then the other thing is, the whole discussion, and I'm doing a show on this very soon on STDs.
Okay.
And how prevalent it is. And so having that conversation again requires some feeling of safety, a feeling that, you know, you're even going to discuss this means that you're going to take it to the next level, and all that takes some time and really feeling that this is the right person to then step into that next level of relationship with.
It is. And, you know, I think the greatest challenge is at the beginning when there is, when sexual chemistry and physical chemistry is very strong from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because it really takes that ability to slow things down.
Mm-hmm.
It's a conscious willpower because everything physically says to move forward, to connect.
Right.
Right? And so, you know, we're talking about the ability to be diligent in one's maturity, in a sense, or however you want to look at, or at least the ability to be able to look forward mm-hmm. and say, you know what, if this really is, has the potential to be something really great, then I'm willing to take a look at slowing this down consciously a little bit and to make sure that all those other pieces are there. And if they are, then let's go for it.
Right.
Let's, you know, really create, you know, fireworks on all different levels.
Right.
Not just, you know, those first ones that kind of make little goldfish and go around and, you know.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And a couple other scenarios that I wanted to mention that I've seen really useful with EFT is EFT on deciding to end a relationship and having the discernment to know when to fire quickly and hire slowly in this position of the most important position that you can have in your life.
Yeah, big tappable issue. Right?
Yes.
Like all of a sudden what happens,
yes.
Okay, too late. I'm in a relationship that
yes.
we did do that physical thing right away and
yes.
not that inherently is wrong, but the other pieces weren't there.
Right.
And that's showing up over time now as an incomplete relationship.
Yes. And something else that is really interesting is if you end up attracting people that you aren't sexually attracted to. And so I actually work with both women that are stuck in a relationship where there's no sexual attraction. And then women that are dating that end up going out with one person after another who so you throw me off. I'm going to have to edit this.
I'm so sorry.
I heard you scratching.
I'm so sorry. You were starting to... I'm so many. I apologize. You were starting to do it a lot. That's my fault.
Okay.
Okay, go back and play it right there. It'll just be one quick edit together.
Okay.
Women who...
So there's another scenario that comes up, which is women that are dating who find... that they are dating one person after another and there's no sexual chemistry. And quite often in their history, there has been someone that they ended up having a lot of sexual chemistry with. And so on the subconscious level, what they're doing is they're avoiding that scenario.
Right.
Yeah. So clearing that will break that pattern too.
Yeah. I mean, the EFT probably more than any other technique that I've ever seen, all the different aspects of relationship of when one's entering, when one finds one that one really isn't being served by anymore, and all those issues are so important to tap on and often have predecessor issues that happened earlier in life.
Absolutely.
That then got repeated over time in the current relationship, and then people continue to have those same patterns over time.
Right.
EFT just being, you know, the most powerful way to really start to clear those so that you can have a clean slate and move forward and create a powerful relationship.
Absolutely. So we wish you well on your journey.
Thanks for joining us today.